Who is an epidemiologist. She works with the West Philadelphia Varicella Active Surveillance Project in Philadelphia. She's been there since the fall of 1999, so she has a tremendous amount of institutional knowledge about this project. And she's going to be giving this presentation.
Good morning. Today I will share findings that address the role of herpes zoster cases in transmitting the varicella zoster virus in school and child care settings. This topic's of particular relevance in the post-vaccine licensure era now that we're seeing fewer and fewer varicella cases. Before I begin, I'd like to acknowledge my co-authors at the Philadelphia Department of Public Health and CDC, including Dr. Viner, who could not be here today. As you all know, the varicella zoster virus, which I will now refer to as VZV, can be transmitted from persons with primary varicella infection or persons with herpes zoster rashes. And this transmission results in primary varicella infection in a person who's susceptible to the virus. Zoster rashes can transmit when there's direct contact with the zoster lesions or when particles from the zoster rash aerosolize and are transmitted indirectly through the air. Therefore, current infection control practices recommend covering localized zoster rashes to limit airborne transmission. However, there have been two recently published case series that have suggested that airborne transmission may occur from localized zoster rashes, even when that rash is covered. The goal of our study was to compare VZV transmission from primary zoster cases to transmission from primary varicella cases in school and child care settings. Our findings will help us address the following question. Are current infection control practices that recommend covering the zoster rash sufficient at limiting VZV transmission? To answer this question, we conducted a retrospective analysis of surveillance data that's used to monitor outbreaks in school and child care settings in the city of Philadelphia. Our study time period was September of 2003 through August of 2008. And please note that in September of 2003, we first started formally documenting varicella control measures implemented by schools and daycares after they reported a zoster or varicella case. In Philadelphia, we've been collecting varicella and zoster case reports since 1995, when both of these conditions became reportable by law. We obtained these reports through both active surveillance and passive surveillance. And if you look at the map, you can see the active surveillance area of West Philadelphia marked in yellow. About one-fifth of the city's 1.4 million residents reside in the active surveillance area. And over 300 community-based sites, including schools and daycares, report varicella cases, zoster cases, or the absence of disease to us twice a month. For community-based sites outside of the West Philadelphia active surveillance area, who are located in the white area, we receive case reports for varicella and shingles passively, and they report the cases to us as they occur. Each academic year, we maintain a database of schools and daycares that have one or more reported zoster or varicella case. We use this database to document control measures and also to identify outbreaks in school and daycare settings. It should be noted that the amount of data collected on each varicella or shingles or zoster report varies. For reports among West Philadelphia residents, we collect detailed information to confirm the diagnosis, except for zoster cases occurring among 20 to 49-year-olds. And we also conduct detailed investigations of any case occurring citywide that's a hospitalized or suspected varicella-related death or a case associated with an outbreak. For our analyses, we classified case reports as follows. We defined a primary case as a zoster or varicella case report from a school or daycare that occurred more than 6 weeks after any other case report from that school or daycare and occurred more than 10 days before any other case report was received from that school or daycare. And please note, 6 weeks is two incubation periods for the varicella zoster virus and 10 days is the minimum incubation period. We considered any primary case that was associated with one or more varicella reports occurring 10 days later to be an index case. and those varicella cases occurring more than 10 days after a primary case were considered secondary cases. And as Stephanie has described earlier, we considered a varicella outbreak 5 or more cases occurring in one facility during a 3-week period. Once we categorized our case reports, we then conducted basic descriptive analyses to describe index cases by disease type. We also examined secondary cases and outbreaks according to the index cases disease type. Secondly, we conducted bivariate analyses to examine the association between the primary case's vaccination status and secondary transmission. Lastly, we conducted multivariable analyses to examine the impact of additional factors on VCV transmission from zoster index cases. And the factors we examined were the zoster rash size and location, the age of the zoster case, and any outbreak precautions taken by the site. And now for our results. In this first slide, we examined transmission by the VCV case type. And as you can see, we received about 1,400 primary cases during the study period. 17% of those had zoster, and 83% of those primary cases had varicella. 218 primary cases were followed by secondary varicella case reports and were defined as index cases. And among the index cases, 12% had zoster and 88% had varicella. We'll now look at secondary varicella cases and outbreaks according to the index cases disease type. If you look at this third column, you can see that we received 640 reports of secondary varicella cases. And 15% of those secondary cases occurred following a zoster index case, while 85% occurred following a varicella index case. Looking at the fourth column, we can see the median number of secondary cases following an index case was one case, regardless of disease type. And lastly, we had 32 outbreaks during the study period. 13% of those outbreaks, or 4, had a zoster index case, and the other 28 outbreaks had a varicella index case. So, these analyses demonstrate that VCV transmission from zoster cases is occurring in school and daycare settings and does contribute to varicella morbidity in the post-vaccine licensure era. Next, we'll examine the impact of case type and vaccination status on transmission. We'll first compare secondary transmission from when the primary case is an unvaccinated zoster case to when the primary case is an unvaccinated varicella case. And you can see that 24% of the primary unvaccinated zoster cases were associated with secondary reports, and 31% of the unvaccinated varicella cases were associated with secondary reports. Despite there being lower rates of secondary transmission among the zoster cases, there was no significant difference detected. We did see about 1/3 less secondary transmission when the primary case was a vaccinated varicella case compared to an unvaccinated varicella case, and this finding was statistically significant. Also, as expected, when looking at secondary transmission following a zoster index case who was vaccinated, we saw that secondary transmission was two-thirds lower than transmission from a primary varicella case. And please note, other internal comparisons between the subgroups of by vaccination status and case type did not show any significant differences. But we did want to highlight that transmission from vaccinated varicella cases and unvaccinated zoster cases was quite similar. So these findings show that compared to unvaccinated primary cases, the risk of becoming an index case is significantly lower for vaccinated varicella cases and vaccinated zoster cases. Additionally, we found the risk of becoming an index case with secondary transmission was similar for unvaccinated zoster primary cases and vaccinated varicella primary cases. Now moving on to the results of our multivariable analyses, where we examined the impact of additional factors on transmission from primary zoster cases. Please note that we've only included those zoster cases with detailed investigations in this table. Also note that we've left out the comparison groups for each factor in the table. So under vaccination status, the unvaccinated persons would have been compared to persons who were vaccinated. As you can see, none of these factors, by looking at the p-value column, none of these factors were significantly associated with becoming a zoster index case. However, it should be noted that the majority of zoster index cases and zoster non-index cases were unvaccinated, less than 20 years of age, and also had a smaller rash size of less than 4 square inches. And I just wanted to point out one other thing under the rash location. It should be noted that 3 of the 11 cases had a rash in the area, in an area that would likely be exposed, and the other 8 zoster index cases where there was secondary transmission had a rash on the area of the body that was likely to be covered. So the conclusions from our multivariable analysis are that zoster primary cases, that we did not find any significant factors associated with transmission from zoster primary cases. And secondly, that the majority of zoster index cases had rashes located on their body, on areas of the body that were typically unexposed. And just to note some of the limitations of our analyses, there were potential differences in reporting completeness for zoster and varicella, which would have impacted our case finding. Secondly, our sample size for our multivariable analysis was limited by the number of cases receiving full investigations. Next, we did not control for the possibility that the secondary varicella cases contracted varicella disease from an outside source in a location outside of the school or daycare. And we also did not control for potential vaccine differences in vaccine coverage by grade. Lastly, we were only looking at the number of secondary cases and did not examine secondary case attack rates. So in conclusion, we found that VCV transmission is occurring from zoster cases in school and daycare settings, and it's contributing to varicella morbidity in the post-vaccine licensure era. And about 15% of all of the secondary cases, varicella cases, were the result of a zoster index case. We found that unvaccinated primary zoster cases and vaccinated varicella primary cases had similar risk of transmission. And lastly, although our numbers were small, most of the index cases had a rash location that was on the area of the body that was likely to be unexposed. So our findings suggest that even when you cover a zoster rash and allowing a child to remain in a school or daycare, this may not be sufficient for preventing transmission of the varicella zoster virus. Further studies needed to validate our findings, and currently we're trying to obtain environmental samples when we're notified of a zoster primary case in a school or daycare setting to try to confirm that there is airborne transmission of the virus particles or the lesion particles occurring from these cases among school students or school staff. Thank you.
Raphael Harpaz, CDC. That was very interesting. Could you say a little more about the age distribution for the zoster as compared to the varicella primary cases? And the reason is because, on the one hand, if the zoster cases occurred at an older age, it's possible that they may be exposed to a more susceptible group of schoolmates in middle school or what have you. On the other hand, if they're younger, there's issues about behavior. We hear these anecdotal reports about in daycare centers where a child with zoster hugs their friends, and so the level of exposure might be much more intense. So can you say anything about the age distribution?
I can.
Yeah, I can.
I don't have the exact citywide data, but from the Varicella Active Surveillance Project, most of our cases are occurring among that occur among individuals who are less than 20 years of age are occurring among those who are 15 to 19 years of age, then followed by the 10 to 14 year olds.
So there is that possibility that they're exposed to a more susceptible population.
Yes.
I see. Thank you.
Can you talk a little bit more about the data you've gathered on control measures and the extent to which you think the schools are following appropriate control measures for those that do have localized zoster in an exposed area?
I think that they'll follow, because we're recommending in Philadelphia that the child actually be excluded from school if they have a zoster rash, unless they've been on antiviral therapy for 24 hours. And as long as the school nurse is aware of the case of shingles, they'll adhere to our guidelines. I think the problem is when the school nurse isn't aware that the child has the shingles rash. That's when no outbreak precautions are being implemented.
Sharif from West Virginia. I have a question for the second presenter. Based on your experience with Facility X, do you recommend to have a special outbreak definition for long-term care facilities? You started to interfere with only two cases or one case, and the outbreak definition, the current one is five or more cases of shingles.
That was a definition that we used in the guideline. We recognize that in other settings, people have used a smaller number of cases as a target to begin thinking about whether or not there is an investigation and whether or not to implement outbreak control measures. And we don't see a problem with that. And I don't know if Raphael can speak to why five was selected. It may have something to do with the issue of resources and being able to identify these outbreaks. But we get calls, and I'm aware of settings where a facility recognizes that they've got three cases and interprets that as an outbreak, and there's certainly nothing wrong with that.
I think you're right. Five, there's no, it's somewhat arbitrary, and at the stage of where the program is, we use that recognizing that we're not down to where measles is, for instance. But also, as part of the recommendations for outbreak investigation, I think we point out that certain settings are much more important to investigate than others, and so it's completely appropriate when you have a setting, an institutionalized setting like you evaluated, that your antennae might have been waving a lot more than it might have been had it been in a different kind of setting. And so I think that's a reasonable approach.
Do you want to say anything? Because of an investigation that we had done a few years earlier in a prison setting, this long-term healthcare facility also represented for us just a higher potential for transmission. And so that's why we considered less than five cases, even just one case in this particular setting as an outbreak.
Hi, thank you to all of the presenters. I'm Laura Ann Nicolai from Virginia. I have two questions. I think my first is for Dana. Since you're saying that the transmission is similar between herpes zoster cases and vaccinated individuals, were any of your herpes zoster index cases actually vaccinated?
Yes, we did have three zoster cases who were vaccinated. It's likely, though, that they weren't reactivating with the vaccine strain of the virus, that they were reactivating with wild-type virus. And actually, I didn't mention this in the presentation, but two of the individuals who were previously vaccinated and developed zoster also had previous histories of disease as well.
My second question, I think maybe for Stephanie, but anyone can comment. Knowing that the recommendations for dealing with susceptible contacts in a school outbreak would be for exclusion, I mean, that's what we have had as well for many years in our state recommendations. But recently, we've been getting a lot of pushback from communities, knowing that it's 21 days to exclude a child, or potentially longer, is a severe burden for a child to be out of school. Have you all had any experience with dealing with that? I mean, we've had situations where we can make that recommendation. We feel that it's the best public health recommendation, but when our local health district directors, you know, they have to deal with the community and work with the community. And we've had situations where we've had school outbreaks in elementary schools that have as high as 20% of students unvaccinated for, I'll say, religious reasons, but, you know, in areas where there's a higher proportion of anti-vaccine parents. I mean, do you have any advice or experience in dealing with that type of situation?
Yeah, that's a really challenging situation, and we do hear about that from time to time with these school-based outbreaks. And we find that for states that don't have school entry laws for varicella vaccination, it can be very difficult to enforce the recommendation, even though it's a good public health recommendation, that there actually are no teeth to enforce that if there isn't a school entry law. I think what we've heard from some schools that even where they don't have school entry laws, that, you know, they recommend vaccination frequently, parents will follow up very quickly, but there are some situations where that doesn't happen. And we were aware of one in December where there was an outbreak, and there were a fairly high number of students that had not been vaccinated, and there were some concerns about how they were going to implement this exclusion policy, because it would have huge educational impacts if children were out of school for 3 weeks. And fortunately, it was right before the Christmas break, and there was a snowstorm. So the kids were out of school for 3 weeks, and it sort of put it to rest by itself. But I don't have a really good answer to that question. It's a real challenge.
We actually do have a requirement for all children born on or after January the 1st of 97, which are currently children about in sixth grade or below in our state. And but the criteria, since many parents use it as a religious exemption, is that the state health commissioner has to be willing to say that this is a matter of public health significance and an outbreak and stuff. And, you know, it's been the fact that our health commissioner is unwilling to take the step to enforce it.
I think, you know, some states have dealt with this by publicizing the outbreak, by recommending vaccination, by using the media attention to sort of drive this point home. And that's sort of, you know, I think they're doing that sort of with a view to the, you know, the long term, that, you know, eventually they will get more kids vaccinated that way. But it's difficult.
Hi, I'm Chaz DeBolt from Washington State. And what we have found, we have a phase in. We will not have a varicella recommendation for all kids in school until 2021. So what we have had to emphasize is that in an outbreak, you have the school entry requirement has to be separated from outbreak control measures. And that's a very difficult thing for schools and even local health jurisdictions to really sort out, that the third graders don't have a recommendation and the kindergartners have a two-dose recommendation. And so you just have to kind of put all that aside and implement outbreak recommendations. And then the other thing I wanted to say is just that.
Sorry, before you go ahead. So do you have separate outbreak recommendations for vaccination?
We haven't. It was our input, I think, to the national guidelines that what we say is, even one case represents the potential for an outbreak, and if you wait till you have five to call it an outbreak and implement control measures, have a good time. Because at that point, we've got enough, especially out in the western part of the country, we have enough people who sign exemptions to vaccination that you will have a goodly outbreak if you delay until you meet the criteria. So we really recommend that at least a notification go out on one case, and usually at two or three cases they will implement outbreak control guidelines. And I guess that's the main thing I wanted to mention, is that we really encourage our local health jurisdictions to take action when one case has occurred.